You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or on Himalaya. My name is David Ramil. Jimmy Butler made his Heat debut on Monday night, posting 21 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and 3 steals, and generally playing like the all-star that he is, helping Miami get their third win of the season, 112-97, over the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks had been 2-1, but were playing on the second night of a back-to-back, and midway through the first quarter, their point guard Trae Young turned his ankle when he drove to the rim and collided with Justice Winslow. ESPN's Adrian Wojnarowski and others later revealed that it was an ankle sprain for Young, who did not return to the game. Afterwards, Shams Charania of The Athletic said that he has actually undergone an MRI and will be out for a few weeks. But in the meantime, the Hawks were able to keep it close up to that point. They had been led by the phenomenal shooting of third-year big man John Collins, who finished with 30 points on 10 of 17 shooting, including 5 of 8 from three-point range. Miami was able to pull away, however, and build a 20-point lead, but then they got a little sloppy towards the end of the game and racked up a season-high 26 turnovers. But they got some big shooting from Tyler Herro, who came off the bench for 29 points, as well as their other rookie, Kendrick Nunn, who chipped in 17 points after a slow start in the first half. But the story of the night was absolutely Jimmy Butler's debut, and it did not disappoint. The excitement in the arena when Butler was announced was extremely high. He is the star of this team moving forward, and he was phenomenal. He was able to pick and choose his spots. He did everything well. He scored getting to the rim. He scored on jumpers. He knocked down a nice three-pointer. He was able to draw free throws. He did everything that we expected from Jimmy Butler. He finished 10 of 15 at the line. That's phenomenal shooting from him. Wasn't the top free throw shooter on the team. I'll get into that a little bit later on. But Butler, again, 10 of 15 from the line, 21 total points, and playing the kind of defense and overall effort that we should expect from him. Drew a number of charges, drew some offensive fouls, really looked polished. If he was rusty after a few games, he had said before the game that he was trying to incorporate workouts as often as possible, even as he was still trying to spend some time with his girlfriend and his newborn baby daughter, Riley, by the way. Not named after Pat Riley, he said. It was the name all along, regardless of the fact that he joined Miami. He did not name it after Pat Riley, but he looked really, really good in his debut. People who did not look as good, however, were Justice Winslow and Kelly Olynyk. Winslow in particular, I think, was a concern because he had been playing so well in the first three games of the season. He looks very much in control. He looked polished as a scorer. He was able to get that floater off. He had the ball in his hands a lot. He was an active playmaker, defender, everything else. Unfortunately, with Butler back in the lineup, Winslow did not look as sharp, and he finished the night with just 2 points on 1 of 7 shooting, missed all 3 of his three-point attempts, did not get to the line at all, was able to corral 6 rebounds, also had 3 assists and 2 steals, so he was able to do some work defensively, finished with a plus-minus rating overall, so not a terrible showing from him, but I saw a lot of Heat fans criticizing Winslow's performance, that he kind of shied away from the moment. And this is something I'll get into in the next segment when I answer your listener questions, but he did not look great. Kelly Olynyk also looked a little shaky, his second consecutive game doing so. After a strong game in Miami's win over Milwaukee, Kelly struggled a little bit, and this seems to be the norm for him. Still coming off the bench with Myers Leonard as a starter, and Olynyk just struggled again, 18 minutes overall, and was scoreless in the game. 0 for 5 from the field, 0 for 5 from three-point attempts. Was able to chip in 3 rebounds, a steal, and 4 fouls, along with 3 turnovers. So he did not seem like he had an answer for Atlanta's big men. They were able to limit what he was able to do. He was, I think, mismatched all night there, trying to guard Vince Carter or somebody along those lines, and he just did not seem very comfortable out there. And so Eric Spoelstra, only playing for 18 minutes, actually got some decent minutes out of Chris Silva, who kind of went in there when Bam Adebayo picked up 2 early fouls. But overall, I'd just say that Olynyk and Winslow struggled a lot in tonight's game, so they just did not seem quite comfortable. I think you can attribute Winslow's struggles with Jimmy's addition to the lineup. Well, Olynyk's not as much. That's just, I think, more of his inability to take handle the matchup against Atlanta, and his overall issues with inconsistency, something that we're going to have to keep an eye on, because it's been a part of his career since he was in Boston, and it still follows him here in Miami. So a lot of people were hoping that Myers-Leonard would be taken out of the game and that Kelly Olynyk would eventually start in his place. That's not the case. Eric Spoelstra still going with Myers-Leonard, who did look a little lost alongside. I got some blowback from some of our followers on Twitter, from some of my followers on Twitter, because I did say that Myers looked a little shaky whenever he was running pick and rolls with Jimmy. He kept darting into the paint, and Jimmy kind of would cross over and try to drive to the rim at the same time. Then Myers would clog the lane, kind of reminiscent of what we had seen a number of times when James Johnson or Josh Richardson were driving to the lane and Hassan Whiteside would be there as this huge obstacle and not allowing them to finish at the rim. So his timing with Butler absolutely needs some work. But it was an overall good game from Myers, who was able to knock down a three-pointer and also pull down 9 rebounds. He also looked active on defense, albeit against a much slower Alex Len, who's 7 foot, I don't know, a million. He's huge out there, not particularly fleet-footed, and Myers was able to keep up with him for most of the night, but he was able to get some good switches and got some nice blocks as well. He actually blocked Vince Carter on an attempt as well, so nice showing from him. Also had 2 assists, showing off some of that playmaking ability that I had talked about before the season. When I spoke to Myers at Media Day, one of the things that he mentioned to me was that he thought his playmaking ability wasn't really highlighted in Portland, and we've seen that from him during the preseason and in his 4 starts with Miami during the regular season, so... The players who did thrive in tonight's victory, Goran Dragic and Bam Adebayo, as well as Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn, of course. Dragic in particular looked phenomenal. He finished with 21 points, and he was just able to knock down a number of key shots when Miami started pulling away, building that 20-point lead. A lot of that was Goran Dragic just looking phenomenal from 3-point range. Finished 5 of 9 overall from the perimeter, 7 of 12 from the field. And he just looked great. His shooting is such an asset, and he's found a niche here. Something I've been talking about for over a year now. When I said that Goran was starting to get up in age and looking at the glut of the backcourt when we had Wayne Ellington and everybody else, trying to figure out what Goran's best position would be to allow Justice to have the point guard duties full time, it would have to be to have Goran coming off the bench. And he's looked great in the regular season. And so hopefully he'll continue that kind of same level of production. Bam Adebayo had a huge night. It looked like he was being overshadowed a little bit by John Collins, who had a really, really great shooting night. But Adebayo was quietly very, very impactful. Finished with 17 points, 4 of 7 overall, 9 of 10 from the line. So he was knocking down his free throws. Also pulled down 10 rebounds, 3 assists, 2 steals, 3 blocks. Didn't turn over the ball particularly much. He only had 2 turnovers. So a great game from Bam Adebayo, who continues to make a strong case as a defensive player of the year, most improved candidate, etc. He's really found a nice groove, and he's continued to make a positive impact there. And of course, the rookies Hero and Nunn were incredible. Hero, 12 of 16 from the free throw line. That was one of the things that I wanted to get into, because he just... on 3 different opportunities, he rose up for a 3-point attempt and drew a foul. Now, he's got a very janky-looking shot when he wants it to. He has full control on his release. Either if he's coming off a pull-up, or if he's curling around a screen, or regardless of whatever shooting motion is in, he understands how close a defender is, or if a defender is closing out on him and not able to recover in time. And he has this little habit, let's say, of kicking out his leg, his right leg in particular, and he was able to not get a couple of free throws, I'm sorry, a couple of calls in his favor, 3 in particular when he was shooting a 3-point shot, and it worked. So I'm not sure if it's not a point of emphasis among NBA officials this year. It's something that had been a problem in the past. I know Goran Dragic had really thrived that way during that 41-41 season back in 2016-17, and then they kind of made that a point of emphasis and took that part away from his game. It seems like he's been able to find that stroke, but Tyler has really taken it to another level. Again, to get 9 free throw attempts just on 3-point attempts is pretty phenomenal. So for now, it looks like a valuable weapon, and over legitimate shots, I just think he kicks that leg out a little bit much. And eventually somebody's going to call it to the official's attention. He's not going to get those calls. So we'll see how that progresses. But coming up next, can Tyler Hero and Kendrick Nunn win co-rookie of the year? You're listening to Locked On Heat. Indochino is the world's largest made-to-measure menswear brand. Start your style upgrade now with $30 off your total purchase of $399 or more at Indochino.com when entering Locked On at checkout. Talk about the player and stat of the game next, but I'll answer your questions about Justice Winslow's struggles. Thanks to everyone who emailed or tweeted at me using the hashtag AskElloHeat. But first, William Rotolante asks, how do we lower our turnover numbers to a reasonable level? 26 turnovers, not great. Again, a lot of those seem to come in late in the fourth quarter when Miami absolutely took their foot off the gas. They had taken Jimmy out. Justice had been sitting for a while. I don't even think Bam Adebayo was still in the lineup. They had Chris Silva out there. They had Goran Dragic. They even brought Duncan Robinson off the bench. So it was definitely not the starting lineup. And they kind of just relaxed a little bit. They just got a little careless with the ball. And Atlanta was able to capitalize on that. They anticipated some passes. And they saw what Miami's offense was like. And what they were running. And they were able to take advantage of those sloppy passes. I'm not sure. It's been a concern. Look, Miami is not great with their turnovers. They've looked a little sloppy. I think a lot of that has to do with incorporating two rookies into the rotation. The fact that they're bringing in a new starting center in Myers Leonard, who still hasn't gotten that timing just yet, may never get the timing. Justice Winslow as the point guard lead ball handler, that's a lot to handle. And the fact that Bam Adebayo has been one of your secondary playmakers is also a concern. I don't like Goran Dragic's turnover ratio. He had three turnovers against the Hawks, despite a really, really good game. He also had three assists, so that kind of canceled out, but that's not the great ratio that we could expect from Goran Dragic, even at this point in his career. I think also that Jimmy's emergence in the lineup is going to change things. The timing of what he does and how he does it is going to be something that players need to figure out. And again, I took a little heat for pointing out that Myers did not look like he had a smooth connection yet with Jimmy Butler. But at the same time, I think that it's a legitimate concern and it will improve. That's not to say that just my pointing it out isn't an indicator that this is going to be a prolonged situation or it's going to be something that affects the team all season long. But for now, it doesn't look great out there. And hopefully they'll find a way to correct it. I'm sure with enough reps, enough games under their belt, they'll start to figure these things out. For now, though, Miami still looked really good despite the high turnover rates. Chris Leach emailed me after the game and asked, what should we realistically expect from Winslow scoring-wise with Butler around 20 points, Nunn around 15, Goran around 15, and Hero around 13? These are his estimates as far as what their scoring is going to be. Where does he find shots? I'm watching his C game, and he has not really been all that involved for several possessions at a time. Secondary question to that from Norsa, who asks, whether it was by design or not, Justice was standing in the corner more tonight than in previous games. He just wasn't involved early, and it seemed to impact his play all game. Do you think it's a product of Jimmy's first game or how the offense will be handled going forward? Some good points here from both of them, and I think it's something to definitely consider. I think we've seen from Justice in the past that he can be a little deferential. This is his first season as the anointed lead ball handler, point guard, whatever position you want to call it. And he thrived in the first three games with that responsibility. And tonight was the first time where it was kind of taken from him. And he kind of had to watch as not just him, but Jimmy Butler and Bam and Kendrick Nunn and Tyler Hero and Goran Dragic, et cetera, et cetera. All these different people who can make plays, who can pick up the dribble, who can initiate offense. And that kind of leaves him without the ball. And he has to figure out a little bit how to be more effective as a secondary option, as an off-ball player. I don't think that's the strength of his game right now. Look, he did finish 1 of 7 from the field. He took 3 three-point attempts, missed all of those. I think that that's where the next level of his development is being a more efficient catch-and-shoot player with somebody else handling the ball a little bit more. And I think we can expect this to be somewhere in the middle. That's not quite the hot take maybe you might expect, but the reality is that with Jimmy's presence on this team, Justice is not necessarily going to fill as big a role as he had over the first three games, and so he has to make adjustments. It's part of his growth, and learning how to work alongside Jimmy Butler is key for his development. In the preseason, when they were both in the starting lineup, we saw Jimmy kind of take a secondary role where he was a little bit, he was playing off a little bit, kind of trying to pick his spots a little bit more effectively and efficiently, allowing Justice to do what he does best. Tonight, that wasn't the case. He was a little bit more aggressive. That is, Butler was a little bit more aggressive, and Winslow, therefore, was a little bit more passive. And he needs to kind of figure out that balance a little bit more. When he does have the ball, he needs to be able to initiate a little bit more. He needs to be able to get to the rim a little bit. And that was not the case. So I don't think it's going to be a situation that's going to affect him for much longer. I think he'll figure it out. He's just looked too good over the first few games. And I think that this is more indicative of the player that he is rather than what we saw against Atlanta tonight. The next question comes from Stephen Wang, who asks, can Deion even find a spot or role in this rotation if everyone is healthy? Stephen, I don't think so. I think the case of Deion is a perplexing one. He was back. His suspension has been lifted. He's just not listed with the team. He was officially listed in the rotation as not available or out from coach's decision. So that's a rarity. And he's healthy. I am not sure what the situation is. I'm not sure if they're trying to find somebody who will take his contract. And you're right. Even if he does return, even if they allow him back on the roster and allow him on the bench, what's going to happen? He's going to sit. He's not going to be able to impact the game as efficiently as Kendrick Nunn has. He's not going to be able to space the floor the way Tyler Hero can. And you've got so many other ball handlers and initiators that I don't know that we can do anything with Deion. And so we saw Miami and their front office was willing to make trades last year to free up some of that glut. And I think that's what the next situation or next step is for Deion as well, is that they're going to try and move his contract. And if they can find a taker, we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, he's probably just going to be either kept away from the bench or he's going to be brought on there and just cemented to it. He's not going to get any playing time. So I think, unfortunately, this is the end of Waiters' career in Miami and his tenure in Miami. Steven also asks, at this rate, can Hero and Nunn be co-rookies of the year? That's an interesting question. It's never happened before, obviously, and I don't expect it to do so now. I'm trying to think of a situation in which it could work out that way, and a lot of it, again, is narrative-driven. If Miami wins a lot of games, then they'll certainly get that recognition. For now, it looks like Kendrick Nunn, who is one of the top six vote-getters in the first week of the regular season as far as player of the week, I don't know if he's going to be able to keep this up more consistently. Tyler coming off the bench is going to have to figure out whether or not he can be that kind of instant offense as a reserve. They're both going to have to put up a lot of points. And I'm sure voters for respective teams with rookies, you know, I'm trying to think of the other candidates that might throw him off a little bit. And you get Cody White in Chicago. I'm trying to think off the top of my head anybody else who stood out. Nobody really does, but at the same time, you know, you've got RJ Barrett in New York. Maybe with that strong media presence, they'd vote for him. There's a number of players who could get a vote here and there, and that might take away. And I think if you're a voter, you're looking at one rookie and saying he's the impactful player on this team. And I think that given Tyler Hero's status as a lottery pick, he would probably be the favorite even if Kendrick puts up comparable or maybe even better numbers. And so that might be unfair, but that's probably realistically how it would play out. So I don't see a co-rookie situation happening just because it's never happened before. And because again, they'd have to put up such gaudy numbers that they would have to outclass any other rookie in the NBA. And that seems very, very, very unlikely. TZA Mac asks, the Dragic, Hero, Nunn, Butler, Bam lineup is not working defensively and they're lousy on offense. Justice should be there at least. Well, I think Justice's struggles probably kept him out of that lineup. And you're probably right as far as the defense being a little lousy, but that Justice would be able to contribute to that somewhat. I'd have to go back and look at what their ratings were with that particular lineup in there. I didn't see it while I was watching the game, so I'll have to look and kind of keep an eye or a close eye as to what their faults were, what could have been done better, if there was just a minute or two where they were, you know, inefficient and not sure how to play alongside each other. But it's a good point and something we should definitely keep an eye on. So thank you to TZA Mac for bringing that up and to all the people who suggested questions and sent those in using the hashtag AskLOHeat. The player, the stat, and the game are coming up next. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're on iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. So my stat of the game is 45, and that's the number of free throw attempts the Heat took against the Atlanta Hawks on Tuesday night. That's a phenomenal number. Six more attempts than they shot at any point last season. And a lot of that has to do with, again, Tyler's ability to draw fouls, Jimmy's ability to draw fouls. It's also just the 41st time in Heat history that they've shot 45 free throws or more. So it's an aberration. I'm not sure if this is going to be the norm or not, but it's a phenomenal number. I mean, a lot of those high foul games were during the Big Three era when you had a number of ball handlers like LeBron and Dwayne who were able to get to the line, who were able to draw contact, etc. So with the number of playmakers on this roster, I think it might be more indicative of what we can see. 45, probably too much. We could probably expect mid-30s, maybe even high-30s. That's still a high number of attempts. Miami did take a lot of free throws last year with Hassan Whiteside. He just wasn't making those. And as I talked about in my Tuesday edition of the Mailbag, you know, they need to be able to knock those down a little bit more effectively. To Miami's credit, they did convert on 33 of those 45 attempts. Not great. 74%, almost, actually 73%. Butler was 10 of 15. Adebayo, 9 of 10, as I pointed out. Dragic was 2 of 4, and Tyler Hero was 12 of 16 for the line. So, you know, you'd like to tighten that up a little bit, but it's still great to see them being able to draw those incredible numbers of free throws. And it provides a burst of offense. And for Tyler, I think that's probably going to, you know, regress a little bit, again, because of the leg kick, because he's a rookie, because he's not going to get the superstar calls and things of that sort. But it's definitely a big potent part of the Miami offense, at least for one night. The GOAT of the game, best player of the game, has to go to Jimmy Butler. The excitement that he brought with him, the overall impact. It's just fun to see a superstar back in the lineup. A really close, clearly established superstar, something we have not seen since Dwayne Wade left in 2016. I mean, you've had some moments here and there with Deion thriving, with Goran thriving, with others, even Josh, Justice, guys like that, but nobody who really commands double teams the way Jimmy does, who's able to pick and choose where he'll make an impact, where he can, you know, look off to a teammate and initiate something or get them going a little bit, because he's such a complete player. He was so great pulling up rebounds, getting to the free throw line, being able to figure out a way through defenses, even on defense. I mean, just anticipating when I think it was John Collins made a spin move in the paint, and he anticipated so perfectly, drew the charge. It was perfect timing on him, and that's the kind of instincts that he has with him, and he's just a phenomenal player. And it's just really fun to watch Miami have that kind of player, and everybody else have to figure out a way to compliment him. For Tyler Hero and Bam Adebayo and Kendrick Nunn and Goran Dragic, to a lesser extent, figuring out how to compliment Jimmy, it was a great thing for them, and hopefully Justice will be able to step as well. Unfortunately, he did not on Tuesday night, which is why he is the scapegoat of the game. We talked about his struggles already, so there's no need to get into it. It's just something that he has to figure out, and I know a lot of that has to do with not having the ball in his hands, not being able to initiate the same way, but even when he did have those opportunities, he did look a little lost. And he needs to be more effective as an off-ball player. He needs to cut a lot more. If he's not going to be, he can't stand in the corner. He's not that kind of three-point shooter. He needs to be a little bit better, more active when he doesn't have the ball in his hands so that he can create looks for others. He doesn't want to clog the paint, but we had a great, great, great ball handler, initiator, and scorer for many, many years on the Miami Heat roster by the name of Dwayne Wade. And when LeBron James had the ball in his hands, Dwayne turned into one of the best off-ball cutters perhaps in NBA history, at least to my mind in recent history. And so Justice needs to learn that, emulate that, and then he can be much more of an impactful player. My feeling is that he will. Hopefully we'll continue to see that progress throughout the rest of the season. The Heat face these same Hawks on Thursday night, who will be without Trae Young, of course. But I'll be recording a show in the meantime with Brad Rowland of Locked On Hawks to talk about tonight's win and to preview the upcoming matchup when they play again on Thursday night. But that's it for today. You can connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm Dave Vermeil signing off, and thank you, as always, for your support. Yeah! We'll be right back.
up, Dean?